came up with a more flexible approach. I don't remember exactly. Oh, Lewis discovered the human scale in media, bypassing the Leviathan effect of Machiavelli. So that's important. If you just passing to Machiavelli, and he was coming up with something post Machiavelli. And the point is, it's the art of being ruled. Lewis knew the environments were too big for people to pretend to bypass. You know what I mean? You had right. to become passive and attentive. And then McLuhan develops that later into a art critical approach to the state as art form, like analyzing a painting. You know what I mean?
Right. But it almost sounds like a Zen thing, the art of being ruled,
yeah.
like how to, like, submit to the inevitable and still be okay.
Right. Because he's starting to see the post-human aspects that McLuhan makes a big deal of by 1950. That Orwell was way behind the scenes, you know, way back there, obsolete by 1900, because McLuhan said we had merged with technology and our fate was total obliteration. Says that 1950.
Mm. Oh yeah.
And that,
oh yeah.
And you know, Clinton, that could be the end of his 1940s angry self. And then he decided to put on a solution, a way to bypass, a jujitsu. He put that on as a something to put in the people's thinking to get them out of the rut of thinking everything was hopeless, which in a way is what the beatniks did. They just gave up and got on the road, started racing around, you know,
yeah.
in their cars.
Well, he finally had to, I think what his means to doing that was to flip out of the history of ideas, which would be, say, the history of the five divisions of rhetoric and the four levels of exegesis and the rhemistic logic through to Vico science, right? Get out of the trying to trace the history of ideas for a while. Trace
yeah.
the history of man-made environments as extensions of self, which themselves adhere to the logic of words. Right, his greatest discovery, McLuhan said later in life, is that all of humans' inventions work and operate on the same principles as words. They are words. So everything it's
yeah.
studied in grammar and in poetry and in English class was applicable to all of our material inventions. So to study them as though they were poems or texts. Right, so I mean,
yeah.
it's pretty uncontroversial to go tell the history of the horse's saddle and the stirrup, and whatnot, while you end up creating a historical narrative or a ground within which now you can situate your historical understanding of peoples of a given age, insofar as their relation to their environment, and more specifically, what it is they're ignorant about. In how their environment is shaping their perceptions and their ideas and whatnot. So
yeah, now you said that's pretty easy to do. So what you just
said? I said well, it's more easy to do than doing what Wyndham Lewis did and go around calling everyone a sexless, neutered child, slave of totalitarian rule, being brainwashed by propaganda and whatnot.
Right, now the
I mean, you're going to get less attacked for it.
Yeah, now there's in that book, The Electric Light, what is that called? The Medium in the Light or something?
The Medium in the Light, yeah.
Yeah. There's a transcription of a speech McLuhan gave to the Basilian Fathers at St. Michael's. They were not a Jesuit college, they were a Basilian faction. And he's explaining to them that Lewis was a very cool character. He was not a heated up angry guy. He was cool in the 20s and 30s. But because the Protestant sensibility ruled the world at that time, talk about globalists, that's the Rockefeller Morgan world, they move across the planet in the 20s and 30s, and these Protestants had points of view and loved rage. You had to get mad at society and express that. He said he wasn't able to harness his view or his new knowledge, get them to harness it, because he wasn't mad enough. Okay? And he was just naturally too cool. So then McLuhan says, now we're in a new time, 1959, the electric, the TV age, where to be cool is the new fad, to be cool. Protestants are obsolete. Note, the Protestant rage ends up being done by students, literate students in the 60s. But anyways, in general, the population has been chilled out and cool, and McLuhan says, now I apply Lewis's coolness. So he did Lewis because TV made Lewis work better than the hot era of radio. It's a really amazing distinction that I've never heard anybody else talk about. But it's right at the end of the essay on, well, just look it up, the one that's in 1959. Do you recall that, Clinton?
Right. Are you thinking of Lemuel and Lilliput or Catholic Humanism and Modern Letters?
No, a third one. Have you got the book there?
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah, look in the middle, say, and at the essay at the bottom, it gives the date. So this is 1959. It's just a private, it's like he told his secrets to the priests. And St. Michael's, he didn't play public games like the Madison Avenue McLuhan. And he just laid out exactly what he was doing. And you would go to the end of that essay. Communication media in our time, some kind of headline like that.
Yeah, let's see, flipping through it here.
It's in the middle of the book.
Yeah. There's no
just give me some titles.
Let's see, part two, communication media, makers of the modern world, keys to electronic revolution.
I think that's it, makers of the modern world. Try that and go to the last page.
Let's see. Yeah, this is 59. Sorry, Max.
So read the last couple of paragraphs.
Let's see.
Aloud.
Ah, yes. In terms of eye and ear, both are completely right. But when one begins making value judgments about the other, as Bergson did, the trouble begins. Bergson simply went over the ear side of things and denounced the visual order as the enemy of all being, capital B. You can see what enthusiasm he was able to rally behind him. As long as you take a firm moral stand in the Western world, you will rally a great number of people to your cause, regardless of how deficient you are in understanding the situation. Wyndham Lewis tried to answer Bergson and the ear men in terms of the eye order. Lewis spent his whole life simply saying, Western man is an eye man. If he abandons the primacy of the eye in structuring his experience, he's finished. Lewis spent his whole life in a magnificent rebuttal of the ear men of his time, and got nowhere because he was not a moralist. He didn't know how to rally that great backlog of Protestant moral fury to support his hypothesis. There you go.
Right, so there's McLuhan admitting that the TV era requires a different stance. And unbeknownst to anybody, because they had a hot image of Lewis, Lewis knew how to be cool, and McLuhan adopted Lewis's coolness and not making value judgments. That was his big change from the 40s, that people who knew him back then noticed, this guy doesn't make value judgments anymore. Because he knew harnessing the Protestant fury wasn't relevant anymore under TV conditions. If you turned off TV, you would have to go back to that, to the hot era. The first half of the 20th century, but isn't that a neat, subtle point?
It's a good, subtle point. It's kind of funny because Lewis is still extremely provocative towards what would have been the moral judgment at the time. Like, for instance, I'm not sure if it's fair to say that Lewis didn't make moral judgments when he went around saying, like, look at how everyone's becoming a dyke or a fag, man. Like, I don't judge them, but you notice it's everywhere? Like, that's not a moral judgment, but, I mean...
Well, he was talking technically. He says, we're for the eye. That's our tradition. We're losing the eye, boys. We don't want to lose the eye. He was trying to bring back a balance.
Mm-hmm.
Too much ear. And, of course, the ear was the Alan Watts and the occultists and the Tim Learys and the theosophists and the Christian Murdys. They were trying to retrieve no time, but as a concept, whereas primitive people live no time, not as a concept, but as a fact.
Right, right.
Perceptual fact.
Yeah, to try and
isn't
structure
it fascinating? What'd you say?
Structure it is to try and structure your native experience of no time within the concepts of no time.
Now Lewis, he was a manipian, so he's satirizing his reader, satirizing everybody, but particularly the reader. That might appear to be moralistic, but it's amoral, manipian satire.
Mm-hmm.
He was so extreme at it that people took it personally. They thought he was judging them. But maybe that was him rubbing the Protestant fury back in people's faces, exaggerating it.
Yeah, he's just trying to more observe what's going on, right? I mean, if you read Wyndham Lewis's books, it's, you know, he mentions all these contemporary thinkers, be it, you know, Julian Benda or Spengler or a host of behaviorists.
And other media, Charlie Chaplin, sports, he covers the whole society.
Yeah, exactly. He's rather exhaustive in trying to weave connections or at least resonances or analogies across, right? I think
the culture that match with the radio effect.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying you guys are all dupes of the radio, now you're dupes of TV. And look, all across society, you got these new tactile qualities from Elvis to beehive hairdos to surfing, and he'd run and then beatnik poetry, go through all the arts and sciences and sports and say, look, they all have this new tactile quality, which was caused by TV, proving Lewis was right, that the medium is the message. Now, McLuhan's discovery, now, Dave, listen to this, Dave, and Greg. Are you around, Greg? I don't think he is. McLuhan says his big discovery that nobody noticed was that he could finally explain why technology numbed people, and therefore they never noticed these changes. That's, he said, his big discovery. He says it right in Understanding Media and maybe twice, and somewhere else in the 1964 period. So what was it? He took Thomas Aquinas' idea of the senses in tactile interplay so that they can be adjusted, the ratios, and technology changed those, numbed them into a new set, a new structure, a ratio, and that's why people got bamboozled. Their senses were altered, and therefore they became numb. Now, nobody, you see, they talk about McLuhan. He came up with Gold Village to be his message. If you ever get a chance on CBC, Clinton, you say, the big discovery of McLuhan is you figure out how we got numbed. And they go, what? What do you mean? What about the Gold Village? No, that's not important. That was Wyndham Lewis. Or Medium's Message. That's James Joyce. No, it's the cracking based on Hans Selye research in Montreal. He figured out the numbness principle. Now, no one ever says that, Clinton.
That's true. The numbness from the amputation. I mean, it's funny because it seems to be a positive definition of a lack. It's more like when you never use your legs, you are, of course, you're not going to have a feel for them. When you've been using this technology this whole time, of course, you're not going to have an embodied finesse with the original body part or faculty that you have no practice with, right? So to say that it's numbed is a strange way of saying that you never, you know, you neglect
your forgotten
sensation there in the first place.
Yeah, you've forgotten faculties. You're numb. You forgot them.
Yeah.
That you had. So look at the kids today, but pretty well everybody, sitting and looking at the little black mirror or even 1.0, just looking at their computer all day long sitting. What huge disservices comes from that ridiculous posture you stay in for many hours.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Practical people, practical doctors like Carolyn or nutritionists would say, this is not good, blah, 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 but they don't know that people are not going to respond to their warnings about their health because they're numbed into a non-body discarnate awareness so that they... Doctors, if they, med school should have immediately said, screw studying the anatomy. We need to turn off the TV environment for 6 months. We need to have a global or local media ecology fast. That's medicine today, because you'll never get out of that hypnosis if you let the society use the TV constantly. You can't get the people away from the natural numbness or addiction to the situation, to the new situation. A medical, the Ontario College of Medicine should say, we need to ban the Black Mirror for 6 months. Yeah. Instead of trying to ban the COVID virus.
But then we couldn't have our tracking app. Come on, man.
I know, you see? There you go. Frig you. I'm going for the discounted virtual. It's too hard to go back to the chemical body.
Yeah, let's wait until we set up all the closed-circuit television cameras and the satellite tracking before we give away the radio transponders, or else we'll just lose sight of everything.
No, I didn't get that. You're saying what? Set up the satellite environment before we have radio?
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, you don't want to get rid of everyone's personal tracking device until the security state can make up for it by camera coverage.
Yeah, you don't trust the Big Brother, do you?
I love Big Brother. But more interesting, I mean, there are calls for more rough and tumble play of the sort which is banned on recess schoolyards because of, fear of litigation and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like schools can't allow kids to throw snowballs at one another. But then again, how else are you supposed to, learn how to throw anything if you can't throw a snowball at someone? How is
you can see,
right? If you can stress the limitations of your body, skateboarding is dangerous. Yes, that's why you fucking do it, because you're not.
Yeah, you can see across the board the numbness of the chemical body, and it's overprotected and super allowed. So, you want to change your sex? Go ahead. It's a numbness to the chemical body. And too much emphasis on an efficiency based on regular computer automated society,
The Black Mirror. And you appraise others and exist within their gaze as a media image, as a construct. Maybe as what you wear directly, your fashion, or the buttons on your backpack or something, or the color of your hair. But as an image, first and foremost, something to be seen, not at all to be, touched. And then to make up for that, there's all this weird-ass overcompensatory weird, sensual sex shit to make up for all the numbness and the lack of belonging in one's own body.
Got the need for conformity, obviously, because you have to go out. So say you have your private world in your phone, and then you go and work at Walmart or Canadian Tire, say. So you put in your time on the store there serving the chemical bodies, while you're longing to look back at your phone. But in both bodies, there is a kind of, yes, you can do anything you want, you can be anything you want, you can have purple hair and all that, but in the end, everyone has to conform, everyone has to wear a mask, everyone has to social distance, no matter what band you listen to, or no matter what color your hair is, or no matter what sort of gender you
are. Yeah, no matter what chemical body thing you're emphasizing as a statement.
So again, there's that thing like with McLuhan, you got the paradox of the decentralization and the centralization. The total, you can be yourself and express anything you want and float around, and yet you're totally under surveillance and self-conscious and conforming so that you don't get in trouble and, get sort of noticed in the crowd.
Right. I wouldn't use the word conformity. You have to use the latest technology. That's the imposition. And you can call that conformity, but conformity evokes old humanist ideas or literate values of individualism. No, you have to use the latest technology.
Right. You also express conformity as being like, for instance, television creates an environment of consensus or conformity in the sense that you can't have too many views ultimately, like how do you interact with people, what is acceptable language, what are acceptable views, all that stuff. Usually that's, in the past you had described how that was ultimately governed by television because it was a very sort of network-controlled thing that everyone all had to watch and have a shared sort of opinion of here's how you generally behave or else you can't go on television. This is how normal humans are. That, I see them trying to impose that, reimpose that in the new technologies, and you see that with the mask wearing and that, where everyone has to ultimately behave a certain way to respect the whole community as a whole.
Well, the present community's bias of what technology they use. Now look at this. Political correctness didn't come in the 50s and 60s. It came in later when TV was an obsolete medium and the digital had taken over. So that left the moralists to control the old chemical body. And that's political correctness. As we got further removed from the chemical body. And now, the controlling of digital surveillance is because we've moved past digital technology into some weird, new, strange situation that's hard to describe what it's based on. But that may be why the acceptance of surveillance and the Patriot Bill kind of stuff is the latest version of control of the chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
The physical body. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, inevitably, there's going to be places that mandate vaccine passports to go to do things. And of course, these are going to be something on your cell phone. So you'd have to carry your cell phone around with you so as to demonstrate you're properly vaccinated. As it is right now,
guys like me and Bob who don't have and don't want that.
I was thinking about that. I mean, there's restaurants that I go to now where they have you check in, because every restaurant that you go to in Ontario that's open, they will take your name and phone number so that they can call you and alert you should there have been later it be demonstrated that someone who was in the restaurant while you were there was COVID positive.
Yes, but they don't. They don't ask for ID, so you can just say, "Yeah, I'm Joe Blow at fucking 1-800."
Oh, sure, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But lots of places just have you check in online using your phone. Now, as it stands, for a while there at the retailer where I work, we were accepting people with medical conditions into our store.
Yeah.
But there were people who had their own homemade medical exemption cards that it's like an arts and crafts project that people would do where they go and they laminate some piece of paper that says this person is medically exempt. And it's like a homemade fucking fake ID bullshit, right? Like so 7 or 8 times I've had someone come in the store without a mask on and pull out it's almost like forging their parents' signature on a letter home that the teacher asked, right? Like, oh, sorry, I'm medically exempt, and they wave this piece of construction paper in your face, and you go, what the fuck is that? Right? So it's like people are already getting creative, just trying to make up their own fucking sort of official-looking documentation and paperwork in anticipation of the inevitable.
Right. There's kind of a Borg-like quality. Remember, the minute the humans or any species figures out a strategy against the Borg immediately assimilates that knowledge into its thing and one-ups them and adds it to its repertoire of, okay, how do I handle situations? So that, I mean, there's a popular thing that's emerging is people are thinking, okay, so let's say the so-called book to say the beast wants to get all the humans and have them all injected and be genetically modified. So now, basically, our operating system has lines of code from some fucking foreign person. We don't know who it is, but it's all there. And where was I going with this? So, people are saying, well, what about all the people? Then there's a lot. Like, some statistics say, like, half of the health workers don't want the vaccine. Then they're saying, okay, so the beast is watching. Who is going to go along with this? And the beast is also taking careful notes. Who is not going along with this? And so the people not going along with this are going to be the target of part B. You know what I mean? So this is just part A. Okay, let's see how many people go for it voluntarily. do you really think if you've got a thing where you want to have a top-down level of control of everyone, that you're going to allow 30, 40% of the population to just opt out of it voluntarily? That's not going to make your system of control work very well if it's voluntary, is it? Voluntary. The only way a fully voluntary system would work is if everyone believes it. You need something like, say, in Japan, you know, where they had tribal nationalism. You know, this is what we do as a Japanese distinct chemical body people. Here's our culture and here's our values. And you can maybe get over 90% of the population to go along with it with minimal additional propaganda. But that is a big question. How do you deal with the non-conformers? Take away their jobs? Tell them they can't go see a rock concert or a sporting event or go shopping? I mean, once you say you can't eat, then it's kind of a get tough, isn't it? That's why people want to head to the woods and get their own farms in case they say you can't go and shop for food unless you take the treatment. I don't need to shop for food. I have a farm.
Yeah, that logic is the natural end conclusion of trying to analyze this entire fucking train wreck, because ultimately what we are doing is normalizing the absolutely ridiculous draconian measures on the excuse of incompetence of the state to have handled this any better. Right, it's sort of, remember early in 2020 when everyone was sending out, when all the stuff was mostly contained to China and the rest of the world was just sort of watching, but it wasn't here yet.
Yeah.
And there were people publishing satellite photographs of greatly increased carbon emissions over the Asian continent and wondering if there were, you know, there was an extra whole bunch of organic matter being loaded into ovens for some strange, completely unrelated reason going on, right?
I remember that. The welded shut doors, the crematoriums.
There was people giving tours of the hospitals. They built hospitals in, like, 6 days. Oh, look, we built an entire hospital in 6 days. And it's like, well, and then people were dying by revealing the... Yeah.
So, they would show time-lapse photography of them building a hospital in, like, a few days, and it was weird. It was like a remodeling and re-responding to a whole world and seeing how fast you could adapt to this new situation. That's what makes it weird, eh, where they take this pandemic and make it such a centralized focus that everything is rallied behind it, and you even watch imagery of your own governments, like, mobilizing to deal with this. So it's like everyone's involved. We're all a crew on this like spaceship that's supposedly trying to avoid getting some wreck that'll ruin the crew. But in the meantime, to avoid that wreck, they hold half the population suspended out in air with no oxygen while they're going, I can't breathe. They're like, don't worry, we'll be back in a few moments. It's like, but isn't that important? I can breathe. It is, but the spacecraft, we've got to just make sure it's fully functioning before you get you back. That's where disposable, where they'll have, you can be damn sure they will never have a chart on CNN showing vaccine deaths and side effects, you know, where they had the chart for the COVID deaths until Biden got in power. Could you imagine, they would never have that and then jump to a commercial for Pfizer. It ain't gonna happen.
Well, that's at who?
Yeah.
Well, I only see it on social media where there are articles written by psychologists about, you know, increase in youth suicides and whatnot. So who's going to compare the COVID death toll versus the suicide death toll of people who just killed themselves after an entire year of complete total alienation from all of society? I mean...
That'll kill you more than the virus will, and it is a fact that this virus, say, has a, you know, point, you know, whatever percent chance of killing you, whereas what you can see now from the stats is a year of existential angst, of being denied ever a chance to even have, like, friends or go out or interact or have goals or happiness or sex is literally a death sentence. And I mean, on the most crude cliche level, what is a really harsh form of punishment in prison when you're really bad? They put you in solitary confinement.
Yep.
And that's what they've done to the population. They've, especially the old people. And there's a sad meme going around, and I'm sure it's true, and there are probably many of them. of an old dude, some Italian guy, you know, real family-oriented that just lives for family. Oh, I need to see my great-grandkids. I need to see my daughter. I have to see these people constantly every day. I got to be in contact. That once they found out that, oh, you mean if I get the vaccine, I still have to wear the mask and I can't really visit and hug and do all that? And some of them said, then just terminate my existence because there's no reason for me to be here then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, we're just on the cutting edge of a conversation that's going to be dissecting the past 2 years and allocating blame for the next 30, but it's nevertheless...
Observe, though, the surrender of power. The person's basically saying, I am powerless if you take away my power, so you may as well just terminate my existence because I really don't have any options left. That's like the voice of the powerless, though, I'll say. It really is the voice of someone whose power has been taken away and resigning themselves. Well, if that's the case, then just kill me.
Right, right. Because any organization which isn't sanctioned, and I mean social, like any act of organizing a people which isn't sanctioned under the aegis of some sort of, you know, left-wing activist political cause is de facto uncontrolled, and so completely, you know, verboten as right-wing reactionary activity, right?
Discredited.
Yeah, right. It could have nothing to do with politics whatsoever. When the news reports it, they're going to complain about the inordinate number of right wingers or whatever the fuck or you know alleged free speech activists and or blah 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 blah, right?
How the fuck did the left, has the left ever, besides like Glenn Greenwald and a few people, has the left ever fucking sat down and examined why they become such fucking awful pinks? Why the so-called conservatives are fucking more akin to fucking, you know, bikers and fucking easy riders who are just out
the
road.
But no one says it yet.
They are confronted a little bit, but not much. Like Brian Stelter, people like that, they'll never confront it. Or if they confront it, they'll pat themselves on the back for confronting it, saying more proof we're fucking enlightened, that we'll even criticize ourselves. Aren't we wonderful?
yeah, right. Well, it's
you know what, maybe the part of the problem is? These people make a lot of money, which justifies their stupidity. If they wouldn't get paid to be like this, then they wouldn't be inclined to profit from it.
Yeah, well, the structure of the system has them as thought leaders and or influencers, right?
Influencers,
thought leaders, role models, etc. Right, the entire contemporary media setup is, you know, we provide the talking points that people are going to feel safe discussing around the water cooler. And people who deviate from you know the overton window of our talking points will not feel safe.
It will not have a voice
with their coworkers, right? So it's literally the entire right. That's an effect. That's all downstream of the current media setup that social media has literally destroyed and contaminated with all this authoritarian, totalitarian, you know, eminentizing
inclinations.
Well, yeah, everyone, yeah, people who are legitimately cheering on the apocalypse or the destruction of the evil colonialist West or whatever, out of a, like, you know, projective suicidal ambition that they'll be on the right side of history or some shit like this, entirely because of they project an entirely socially constructed nature of reality. Oh, nothing, you know, like, whatever people believe is real isn't necessarily real. They just believe that because whoever they're with believes that too. So we just have to shame them and you know talk a better world into existence on the internet because everyone is whoever they want to be and they make their image to be. Oh, by the way, I don't feel my body. I'm numb because I'm a content construct vicariously puppeting around a meat body at the end of my identity, right? It's people just aren't themselves.
You know what I also don't, I find is an interesting pattern, is the willingness of so-called conservatives to let anyone express their views, even if they hate them, and you can see that.
Oh, yeah.
Often
it's
will
principled.
Be the that guide them. That's okay. Whereas on the other side, they are not tolerant of views that are not, they feel that views that are contrary to just the one way of thinking are dangerous, and that the people who proffer them up are like a scourge from the past that needs to be eradicated once and for all. We will no longer tolerate this anymore. And it's just like so dangerous. It's like the Chinese Cultural Revolution, where you get some moronic 17 or 20-year-old kid who really doesn't have much experience ultimately, suddenly thinks he fucking understands everything and is going to go out and smack down everything else, you know, and of course realize later how, you know, fucked up that was. But it's amazing the conditions that arise to allow this kind of behavior. And what you're seeing now is a very reminiscent of the Cultural Revolution, where good people or merchants or shop owners would be held to the hugest ridicule, when in the end they were just decent people trying to make an honest living and, you know, never really fucked too many people over. And yet they're being held up as a complete villain by some 18-year-old kid that's never probably had a real job except, you know, being a member of this thug group.
Oh, sure. Well, it's all sins of the father, or the generational inheritance of some system, some socially constructed system of thought or belief. The entire theory of how people work, the entire theory of how the world works, how it is people perceive anything, it's all now derived from, well, people just see whatever their parents and their friends and people who look like them taught them to see, and that's how they see the world that way. And so you're harboring a bad worldview. You're harboring something that needs to be erased because people are infinitely programmable. They'll see whatever their mimetic inclusion in their group, right? Whatever all their friends see, mm-hmm. whenever they feel comfortable with people, you know, they just socially construct a worldview and an opinion of everything else, and historically constructed, that's all toxic. We just have to erase the past. And whereas on the free speech principled people look at the society as a machine of individuals, all of whom through discourse will, you know, the truth will win out. If we all, you know, talk to one another, then the good ideas will rise like cream to the top.
Right.
And, but yeah, they think of the world actually as a whole bunch of embodied individuals who are trying and striving to be rational and who are maturing and who are growing up and are capable of adulthood. And that's
right.
Not at all the view in the socially constructed,
No, it's a view that you need to enforce this proper way of thinking, because people can't be trusted because they might have different views than the ones you want. But the audacity to think we have discovered here's the proper views on issues and everyone must think this way, you know, it's just fucking ridiculous how almost
it's like
90s,
a relativism of cults. On the socially constructed side, it's like everyone is a member of a cult and believes whatever it is their cult believes.
Yeah.
And so we just have to make the biggest cult and deprogram everyone who is a member of a cult that's not ours, which means indoctrinating them into our cult. And
well, that's how it's the Chinese Communist Party and the Uyghurs. That's the almost exact thing they think. The Uyghurs are in the wrong cult. We need to get these people better jobs, ship them around the country so they won't all congregate together and get too into their religious stuff and traditions, and we'll bring them into our, you know, more normal consumer sort of, you know, industrious side of life and tell them, don't worry about religion. Being a good citizen and working hard and having a nice apartment is the way to go.
Hey, Dave, it's a battle of technologies. Which technologies the tribe is imposing on people and what the other people prefer, other technologies. I mean, the Middle East is all these guys don't want Disney and McDonald's. They're against those technologies. So I call those the mythic stages is what we're witnessing in battle. The different technological preferences by different cultures for different reasons of introduction to the first world, historically. So it's not... don't bring in ideas in that and content. It's not a cult. It's the conditioning of which technologies are preferable. Now,
well, the idea that it is a cult, Bob, the idea that it is a cult arrives from ignoring the mediated ground. Sociology, in the perverse form that we're discussing it, which is all social constructionism, completely ignores how it is people communicate and whether or not people are in their bodies or not, except as a demographic statistic, right? The color of your skin or your gender is just signifies which cults you were born into, but it all exists in this abstract floating space of supposed hierarchies of oppression, where there are no bodies, there are only floating identities, and where you are floating in this space relative to everyone else for to be, you know, punched up towards, or whether you're entitled to punch down to correct, you know.
Right, so that's the concern with all the internet, is your chip body image. If you're a racist in your chip body, that's fucking, no, you can't be your racist chip body. We gotta eradicate them.
Yeah, because you're interacting with too many people and groups and minds. You can't bring chemical body categories.
Yeah, you gotta stay
body.
In your own lane. Stay in your own
yeah.
lane. That's the phrase.
Okay.
For, you know, mind your
I
own
I
want
to add this point.
Don't
listen
don't
to you
to
guys.
Anything other than your pigeonholed identity, please. Like,
right. So, listen to you guys. Look at this. If politics argued over the media levels, if they engaged McLuhan's arguments, you'd bypass the chemical, the irrelevant things that never hold up and don't get anywheres. And maybe if you're against marijuana or against prostitution, that just helps the police bureaucracies. So a lot of politics is based on law and order, arguing over what to do with the chemical body. But if people actually started arguing as political parties about which technologies they favor, that would allow you to get past the stupid cliche stuff and would interest people in politics again, because it would be directly affect their lives and what media they use. So McLuhan actually started a new political party based on different issues, and it never was picked up. But that's what I'm saying is what
once
you start a political party, you talk about which media you prefer or why you don't prefer media. What?
Did he have a name for the political party that he started, or was
he's too busy dealing with accusations that he caused the fire or that he was apolitical. I'm saying that he was the most relevant political guy, and I'm saying he might have advocated that political party. I'm making it up that he would be interested in my idea. But my idea is you apply McLuhan, and politics should be an argument over which technologies a society uses. Not issues of conformity or individual freedom.
Right? That everyone, that definitely the authorities want everyone to have this shared technology.
Right. And politics would be conflicted over whether you use them or not. And that would get people really uptight about whether they have the right to sell cars or not, or to even have cars. And that's what ecology... Ecology is a pitiful attempt to save nature when really you want to save earlier technological systems, cultural values that come with them. So people are missing that the real political fight is in the world of technologies, and I would say that's what Big Brother really operates on, the level of technologies. To let people have any ideas with their chemical body, they can argue whatever they want, different positions, but the real thing is the deep state that favors electronic surveillance or whatever technologies allow that, and that's what they're working for. That's their politics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not allowed to be talked about as politics. Like, okay,
well, briefing thing, maybe say someone like Josh Hawley might say, we need to, like, you know, take on the these tech companies because their role is, you know, much larger, and they are the public square, they are a broadcaster, blah, blah, blah.
Well, the all-involving nature of Web 2.0 and social media has forced everybody now to enter the technological debate. That's the popularity of the Social Dilemma documentary and anybody else, like arguing about what to do with Facebook. Finally, we're arguing about what to do with technologies.
Yes, but in
that's real politics.
Solutions, or are we just more saying, fuck, I hate some of this shit, but we're not saying, here's what I would prefer. I mean, what would people... Go ahead.
Easy, yeah. Dave. People who are using these technologies still speak and act in the post-human perception that information is this flowing substance which has a mainstream of the main zeitgeist of people who are downstream from mainstream media, and then you've got the reactionary, radical outliers who want information to spread misinformation, and it's all still Shannon Weaver It's like in the invisible space where everyone is a floating identity in some hierarchy in the giant mathematical n-dimensional grid of your skin color and your income and your, you know, educational level and how many followers you have on Twitter and wherever that places you in the great power hierarchy of whether you have a right to shut up or, a right to speak or whether you should be shut up or whether you should be canceled or not. Like, it is in this imaginary projective space where everyone's so, where people solipsistically see everyone else as a embodiment of this abstract construct, identities, intersectional stereotype. Like, that's the space that this, that the use of this technology has created, has inculcated in people. It's created people who see the world this way. So if you want to escape the whole mainstream narrative versus alt-right narrative versus fake news, misinformation conversation, if you want to get outside of that altogether, then that entails returning to an actual embodied individual relation to your proximal environment first, including understanding what your computer is and why there is so much more to it than just fucking Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. At least that's been my approach.
But also to then, what is beyond your computer? You know, what if there's no other, if the computer becomes the main distraction to even look at all the previous bodies, so it's like, why open a restaurant when you can have, you know, home and garden television and YouTube and see everything all done and real fast while you just sit back? It's like a great vicarious experience. Sorry, I got another phone on the thing. Hang on a sec, I'm just going to go off thing here. I'm distracted now. I can't multitask. I'm an old school garson.
Okay, so Clinton, what do you think of my McLuhan political party proposal?
Oh, parties require, well, there's no formal cause. There's no, he's not preaching to it, right? Typically, there's a public, a voting bloc to whom parties are courting. And McLuhan hasn't won. So you can run, but if no one even understands your platform yet, then who are you courting with your party? I agree that he's intensely political. It's just what's his platform?
Well, today, people are saying ban Facebook, go somewhere else. They either accept the digital lifestyle and say, okay, we'll go to Telegram, and Trump's going to invent something in the next couple of months, a new digital channel or platform. Arguing over whether to have Facebook or not is the media ecology. Did they argue over about TV? I don't think so. Did they argue about radio? No. It was all assumed this was a benefit to have these new technologies. But this is the first time.
You're older than I am, but I mean.
What?
You're older than I am, but I thought TV is going to rot your brain was a generally held truism 40 years ago, 50 years ago.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who objected to it, but they didn't make it a political issue. There wasn't hearings in Congress about whether we should grab the television and say, no, this is a public utility, and we can't have private companies running it. And the reason nobody did that, because it was a private ownership, capitalist, print-oriented society, so it was natural for private companies to own TV. They didn't recognize the communistic nature of television.
Yeah, people would look at state-sponsored broadcasters as a more totalitarian.
Tribal. Totalitarian is tribal. It would be anti the literate environment. That's why McLuhan said literate people are the most useless in dealing with media ecology because they have a private identity, which if you would question the environment's interaction on it, it threatens a private identity. Remember, he got that big insight from a Japanese guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wondered why people objected to studying technology, and the Japanese guy, I guess from his outsider perspective, told him, no, you people, when you investigate technologies in the environment, it threatens your private identity. You people have private identity, and it's threatened. So there, one could say today, whereas McLuhan said Lewis was obsolete because he didn't know how to harness the theory, McLuhan's obsolete, says Mr. Dobbs, because he didn't know how to bypass the natural instinct of Western man to feel any discussion of the environment. It was an invasion of their privacy.
Right.
But we're
right.
not there or, anymore.
Or a rude robbing of their self-deceit of having agency in the first place.
Right. And now that's not... that people are don't have strong private identities in the literate sense. So they don't mind banning environments like Facebook. They see it affects them. They want to do something differently about it. Look at the guy who made the Internet, Tim Berners-Lee. He's trying to create an alternative Internet. He's so outraged at what's happened to the new technology.
Right, World Wide Web specifically.
Yeah.
I mean, Web 1.0, right before social media, let's say smartphones, before smartphones and Web 2.0 and social media, which was only like 10, 15 years ago, the Internet was overwhelmingly constitutive of individual identity and personality. Although it was electric, it was mostly textual, it was already niche, and for people who couldn't find connections in real life, or right, it was the anti-environment to the TV environment. So
yeah, it was the meme of private identity, not the actual fact. You couldn't do it because you're inside electric communism. But this is what Logan wrote about. He thought the internet would bring back literacy, and he was all for that, Bob Logan. But it was the virtual after image of literacy, not constitutive. But you're right.
It was disembodied, I suppose. It was not constitutive of the actual environment. TV has been constitutive of the environment right up until social media and smartphones continued
right.
that tribalism. So
right.
I see what you're saying.
So,
virtual.
Yeah, there was a patina of private identity came in with the internet. Everybody stayed home and started typing and writing.
It brings back pen pals. Oh, wow. They thought, bring back none of it. Even then, in the 60s or 70s, you know, it was an effort. On Sunday, you need to write your pen pal, you know, because it would take a while.
Right.
You have to scrawl out a whole letter. So by then, suddenly typing away. The other thing I first noticed in the early 2000s, suddenly with the availability of the net, was I felt like I now have the sort of same power as, say, someone that works at an auto parts place or something to research, but I don't have to wait for him. I can just start typing and going in. It's like almost after hours, I have access to the office and all their infrastructure now, and I can do my own filings, or the library. I can go through the catalog all just with typing. I don't have to go through boxes. I can access all the same stuff that the bureaucrats can access. So it felt this really kind of sort of liberating, sort of empowering.
Yeah, individual autonomy.
I felt, yeah, that was that was some of the nice sensations that you would feel.
Right.
Awesome.
Right. And then there was, but parallel to that were the MUDs, where people would enjoy putting on fake identities and having more than one identity.
Right.
Sort of
and attacking multi-identity.
And
all that shit and causing havoc and, yeah, carrying out sort of violence and conflict.
Yeah. But I'm saying that to take this discussion and make it a political party. Now, probably nobody would take it seriously. But
you need
to
good acronym. Well, so be careful what you call it. Don't call it like the Canadian Reform Alliance, you know,
right.
Progressive or whatever, because that's crap. Remember when those guys did that? They didn't realize that until, like, the newscasters, they announced that, well, we've aligned, you know, the Progressive Conservative Party with the Reform Party. And they forgot about whatever was the acronym then, and they didn't notice it. In other words, they went through with it, they got the, like, logos, the business cards, the whole thing, and then after, they then go, and now, unveiling us, and they hand out their business cards, and everyone that gets their business cards going, huh, crap, is your acronym, eh? That's pretty unfortunate, and that was the end of that.
I call it the Balanced Mythic Stages Party. Mythic Stages, what's that? Yeah, balance. The Balanced Mythic Stages. What's the Mythic Stages? You'd be able to bring in a whole new dialogue into politics to bypass the cliche stuff that drives 70% of Americans out of politics and they're not interested in. It's too cliche, the old dialogues.
You know, I think Trump then was on to something, because when you go back to, you know, then what is everyone interested in besides having free dialogue? Is they want to be able to, you know, have money to have their car and gas and send their kids to school and all these expenses. So they want an economy that seems robust, you know, where there's lots of jobs and shit going on so that the cash will flow. And Trump represented that. As that was Trump's solution to all this digital chaos. Is let's just keep, you know, the basic hardware chemical body in a sort of healthy sort of service state and see how everything else all mixes in with it.
Yeah, he definitely, well, there's been a trend to get back to the chemical body for the last 10, 20 years, say, in different ways. That's what people were yearning for. There was just too much disembodied input and pressure to make and contribute to it. So
you see them trying to merge that with the machine in the lockdown through those Peloton machines, where it's like a woman's alone in her apartment. She's some really hot, say, early 30-something, really fit. She lives with her cute little cat, and she jumps on her machine, you know, and it plays, you know, a recent hot sort of, you know, hip-hop dancey kind of tune, and she breaks out of sweat, you know, and she's working out, and then there's someone on the screen, you know, thousands of miles away, like, saying, go for it, yeah, baby, yeah, yeah. But the whole time she's all alone. The only other thing near her physical is a cat.
What are you citing? What was the root of that example?
That's an example of trying to get to the chemical body, but yet being isolated from, like, actual other people, kind of. So within your isolated state, they're servicing your chemical body. Don't worry, I know you're living in your computer all day, but step in onto this machine and look in the screen, and look, here we are, looking beautiful. You're in your 30s, you got a beautiful figure, look, you're breaking a sweat, you're stretching, yeah, yeah.
That's great, because what that means is that the exercise machine is just one more computer peripheral, one more I.O. device. You got your keyboard, your mouse, your screen, and your Peloton, which is still just feeding data into the same computer and feeding data out to the same computer. Yeah.
Yes.
So
it is like, what would you say, that's how it interpenetrates and sort of subsumes previous environments and tries to, like, incorporate them, but still making something different, anew. So suddenly, yes, she's doing the exercise, but it's like, as you describe, it's like, it's one of her many functions.
You know, I was looking for a digital scale, like a weight scale, so that I could track, you know, my body weight, whatever. And before I thought of going to the thrift store, where they had 17 fucking scales for $5 a piece, right? Before I thought of that, I was walking through the mall, and I was like, all right, I need a digital scale, and I walked into the Source by Circuit City, and I was like, hey, you got any weight scales, like bathroom scales? And I was like, oh yes, come right this way. And he showed me the $120 Fitbit branded digital scale with, you know, where I'd have to go sign up with this fucking website and all this shit. And I was like, no, dude, I want to know how much I weigh. Like, I want to know how fat my ass is right now.
Yeah, but we want to know where you live.
$120 on, like, a Bluetooth digital internet connected fucking, you know, like, my God, a weight scale, holy fuck, right? And yeah, of course, I went to fucking the Salvation Army and they had like a pile of them. I just dug, you know, like $5 a piece, right? Obviously.
And with those, you know, you pick, like, are you on the heavy side and you wish you were a little lighter?
Oh, no, I'm the scrawny motherfucker, but
funny, right? So you go in the store, and so on one of them you weigh 125, and another one you weigh 137, so you buy the one that you weigh 137 on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, guys, listen. I propose that Mirror University starts a political party so that we're not just yakking away our opinions. We need to translate this into chemical body and chip body activity. So I'm proposing a balanced mythic stages. Mao Zedong, like 20 fucking years, a long march, you know, educating the people about the issues. So that's part of, I propose that this political party is an extension or parallel to the Mirror University educational agenda. All right? I'm doing it. I've started a political party. We'll see if other faculties are with me. But
sure.
we want to make this dialogue a political, it's political what we're talking about. Way more political than Black Lives Matter or anybody else, all right, or whatever the stupid things you got going up in Canada with your conservative pro Stephen Harper remembrance memorial.
No, but I think the in Canada, the guy now could talk about, can you, like Bob, who is the last, who's the present leader of the so-called Conservative Party in Canada? And I mean, they're a pretty hideous party, as you know,
if I want to know what's going on in Canadian politics, I go to Heather Morgan's Twitter, and she's a radical leftist kind of person, and she